I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now! Police in Los Angeles are raiding the Gaza Solidarity Encampment at UCLA one day after a pro-Israeli mob attacked student protesters with fireworks, metal rods, and tear gas.
We have people mazing us, beating us with bats and sticks, throwing whatever they could to us, and none of this law enforcement was here at all. So it's kind of disappointing that we're seen as the perpetrators here.
We'll go to UCLA for the latest and speak to a student reporter who was beaten by pro-Israeli counter-protesters, as well as three of his Daily Bruin reporter colleagues. One was hospitalized. Then we talked to the former president of Brandeis University, which was founded by the American Jewish community in the wake of the Holocaust. What he says about today's student protests may surprise you. Then Amnesty International is calling on the Biden administration to immediately halt arms sales to Israel. We'll go to Jerusalem. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In California, riot police have moved in on the Gaza Solidarity Encampment at the UCLA campus, making arrests and violently dismantling the peaceful protest site. Students reported serious injuries as the officers raided the camp, shooting rubber bullets and flashbangs. We'll go to L.A. after the situation there continues to develop. On Wednesday, police also made dozens of arrests at the Gaza Solidarity encampments at Dartmouth College, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and the University of Arizona. Here in New York, police moved in on Fordham University protesters just hours after they set up their encampment at Fordham's Lincoln Square campus in Manhattan. The Fordham raid came a day after New York police arrested nearly 300 protesters at Columbia University and the City College of New York. On Wednesday, New York City Mayor Eric Adams defended the police raids and claimed outside agitators were trying to, quote, radicalize young people. Unquote. Meanwhile, on Columbia's campus, faculty members addressed students. Palestinian-American historian and professor of modern Arab studies, Rashid Khalidi, evoked Columbia's 1968 telling students their actions would one day be commemorated in the same way.
This is the conscience of a nation speaking through your kids, through young people who are risking their futures, who are risking suspension, expulsion, criminal arrest in order to wake people up in this country.
As the crackdown on the student uprising intensifies, the House has passed a bill to widen the federal definition of anti-Semitism. Critics of the bill included Jerry Nadler, the most senior Jewish member of Congress and a strong supporter of Israel. Nadler said, quote, this bill threatens to chill constitutionally protected speech. Speech that is critical of Israel alone does not constitute discrimination. The bill sweeps too broadly, Nadler said. In Gaza, UNICEF is warning an Israeli ground attack on Rafah would bring catastrophe on top of catastrophe. The UN agency estimates there are 600,000 Palestinian children crammed into Rafah. On Tuesday, Israel's finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, called for the total annihilation of Rafah and other Gaza cities. While negotiations continue over a temporary ceasefire, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken Wednesday Israel will refuse to end its assault on Gaza as part of any deal with Hamas to free hostages. This comes as aid deliveries for Gaza continue to come under attack. Jordan's foreign ministry has accused Israeli settlers of attacking two Jordanian aid convoys carrying food, flour, and other aid. Meanwhile, humanitarian aid has passed through the Erez crossing for the first time since October 7th, but aid groups say Israel must allow in far more aid as Gaza faces famine. Back in the United States, city councils in Boston and Tacoma City, Washington, adopted Gaza ceasefire resolutions this week, while the Bloomington, Indiana City Council overrode their mayor's veto of its ceasefire resolution. In California, Richmond City Council voted to divest from Israel. Last week, Hawaii's House of Representatives passed a ceasefire resolution joining the Hawaiian Senate, which passed their own resolution in March. Meanwhile, Bloomberg is reporting the U.S. and Saudi Arabia are nearing a deal to give Saudi Arabia new security guarantees and access to advanced U.S. weapons. Diplomats say this could lead to Saudi Arabia and Israel establishing diplomatic ties. In other international developments, the Colombian president, Gustavo Petro, has announced Colombia's cutting diplomatic ties with Israel. Petro made the comment during a May Day rally in Bogota.
Creo que hoy la humanidad toda en las calles por millones está de acuerdo con nosotros.
I believe that today all of humanity in the streets by the millions agree with us, and we agree with them. It cannot be the times of genocide, of the extermination of an entire people, can't return before our eyes, before our passivity. If Palestine dies, humanity dies, and we will not let it die.
Colombian President Petro's announcement came as May Day rallies around the world expressed solidarity with Gaza and Palestinian workers. Here in the U.S., some members of the United Auto Workers called on their president, Sean Fain, to rescind the union's endorsement of Biden over his support for Israel.
As a UAW member and as the president of my local, UAW must use its political power to put teeth into their call for a ceasefire. UAW must revoke endorsements of these politicians if they want to make good on their call for a ceasefire.
The UAW has endorsed a ceasefire. Tens of thousands of students and workers joined May Day protests in New York. In the Republic of Georgia, parliamentary session has been canceled as protests swell in the capital, Tbilisi, against what's known as the Foreign Influence Bill. Critics say the bill uses Kremlin-inspired measures to crush dissent and moves Georgia away from Europe and closer to Moscow. The bill, pushed by the ruling Georgian Dream Party, is just one vote away from passage. Police have deployed pepper spray, tear gas, water cannons against protesters near the parliament. Kenya's president Tuesday ordered the nationwide evacuation of all residents living along riverbanks as the country continues to be devastated by massive floods. On Monday, at least 50 people were killed after a dam burst in the Rift Valley, with torrents of water and mud gushing down and destroying homes in its path. Large areas of Kenya have been devastated by flooding over the past 2 months, killing some 100. Flood survivors describe the chaos.
When I opened the dining room door, the water gushed in and made its way through the kitchen. That is how I got out of the house. My husband was forced back into the house by the water, and by that time, the house had already started coming down. He managed to quickly maneuver and get out. My daughters, who were in the next room, were swept out of the house by the force of the water.
Reuters reports 10,000 people have lost their homes in Nairobi alone due to floods. A former employee of Spirit AeroSystems who blew the whistle on the Boeing supplier's manufacturing and quality control issues has died. 45-year-old Joshua Dean died of a sudden illness after he contracted an MRSA infection and pneumonia. Dean had accused his former employer, Spirit AeroSystems, of firing him in retaliation for speaking out against the company, including in a shareholder lawsuit last year. Spirit AeroSystems built the door panel that blew out of the Alaska Airlines 737 MAX 9 in January. Josh Dean's death comes 2 months after Boeing whistleblower John Barnett was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound shortly after giving evidence in a lawsuit against Boeing. Arizona's state Senate voted Wednesday to repeal its 1864 near-total ban on abortions after two Republicans joined their Democratic colleagues. The House already voted for repealing the Civil War-era ban last week, and Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs is expected to sign the bill into law, thereby reinstating a 2022 law that also bans abortions, but after 15 weeks of pregnancy. But the 1864 ban could temporarily go into effect this summer due to procedural rules unless the state Supreme Court approves a motion by Planned Parenthood to stay the ban until the repeal can be enacted. Arizona Democrats and abortion advocates celebrated the Senate vote Wednesday. This is Athena Salmon of Reproductive Freedom for All.
Taking our anger and frustration straight to the ballot box this November and voting for Reproductive Freedom for All. And first and foremost, that includes flipping the Arizona House and flipping the Arizona Senate so we can protect abortion rights in the future.
The United Methodist Church overwhelmingly voted to overturn its 40-year ban on LGBTQ plus clergy Wednesday. Delegates at the UMC General Conference also voted not to penalize clergy who ordain same-sex unions, effectively allowing same-sex marriage in the church. The historic move caps off a years-long struggle to end LGBTQ plus discrimination within the church. Over recent years, around a quarter of UMC congregations have split from the church over its acceptance of LGBTQ rights. And President Biden announced another $6 billion in student loan relief, this time for over 300,000 borrowers who attended the art institutes. Biden said the now shuttered group of for-profit colleges, quote, knowingly misled students and cheated borrowers into taking on mountains of debt without leading to promising career prospects. The Biden administration has now canceled $160 billion of student debt for some 4.6 million borrowers since the Supreme Court blocked a plan to cancel over $400 billion in federal debt. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. As we broadcast this morning, Los Angeles police and riot gear are dismantling a pro-Palestinian encampment on UCLA's campus after hundreds of police used flashbang grenades, rubber bullets, and tear gas in a face-off with protesters who chanted, "We are not leaving, you don't scare us." The police raid at UCLA came a day after pro-Israel counter-protesters attacked the encampment with fireworks, metal rods, and tear gas for hours late Tuesday night and into early Wednesday morning. At least 15 people were injured. This is how UCLA's student newspaper, The Daily Bruin, described the violence instigated by counter-protesters in an editorial. Quote, "It began with ear-piercing screams of wailing babies loudly emitting from speakers, counter-protesters tearing down the barricades, laser pointers flashing into the encampment, people in masks waving strobe lights, tear gas, pepper spray, violent beatings. Fireworks sparked at the border of the encampment, raining down on tents and the individuals inside," the Daily Bruin wrote. The editorial noted Los Angeles police did not arrive until slightly after 1 a.m. Meanwhile, around 3:30 a.m. Wednesday morning, four UCLA student journalists were attacked by the pro-Israel counter-protesters on campus. One of the journalists was treated for injuries at the hospital and has since been released. There were no arrests after Tuesday night's attack. Wednesday's classes were canceled. The Daily Bruin's editorial ended with a question, quote, "Will someone have to die on our campus tonight for you to intervene, Jean Block? The blood would be on your hands."
University of California President Michael Drake and the UCLA Chancellor Jean Block have launched an investigation into what California Governor Gavin Newsom condemned as the, quote, "limited and delayed campus law enforcement response," unquote. Meanwhile, the campus police union issued a statement that, quote, the decisions regarding the response of the UC police rest firmly in the hands of campus leadership. For more, we're joined by three guests. Shanth Kodialam Nanganeri is a senior staff writer for the Daily Bruin, UCLA's student newspaper. They are one of the four reporters who were attacked. Mel Boor is a staff reporter for the Real News Network. She was at the Gaza Solidarity encampment Tuesday night when counter-protesters violently attacked it for several hours. And Gay Teresa Johnson is an associate professor of African American Studies and Chicano Studies at the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA. She writes and teaches on race and racism, cultural history, spatial politics, and political economy, a member of the UCLA's chapter of Faculty for Justice in Palestine, which has called on UCLA faculty to refuse university labor today, the day after May Day, quote, in protest of the university administration egregious failure to protect the student protest encampment from attacks by self-professed and proudly Zionist mobs coming to campus every night to enact violence, unquote. Welcome to all of you. We want to begin with Dr. Gay Teresa Johnson. Before we get into the horrifying details of the attack on the Gaza encampment, if you can explain why you're withholding work today and the overall context of how UCLA is dealing with this protest encampment and why the issue, so often not talked about in the corporate media, of why the Gaza encampment exists.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. We are so inspired by our students today. We are refusing our labor to the University of California at Los Angeles because we know that the conditions under which that they were arrested, the conditions upon the conditions that they were subjected to night before last with the counter-protesters, the violence that they have endured night after night after night, the complaints that they have lodged and have that have been ignored by the university administration, all of the ways in which they were failed by the university administration, those are also our work conditions. And until our students are supported, we will also be stopping work. The necessity for the camp was, I mean, what is going on in Gaza, what is happening here in the United States is linked. And these students who have done so much study and who have done so much organizing are clear about the connections between U.S. racism and international imperialism, and they are so clear about their role and purpose in this movement. So many of them have now been politicized, and this will not stop just because of tonight.
So, Shanth, if you could explain, you were one of four journalists who was attacked. Tell us what happened.
Walking back from that protest where a group of pro-Israel counter-protesters had stormed and seized upon the campus at Dixon Plaza and Powell Library. And me
Shanth,
and three other journalists.
If you could speak as loud as you possibly can, we're hearing it, and come closer, yes, to your computer. And also, you're describing what happened. Tell us what night, about what time it was, you with your four Daily Bruin, the three other Daily Bruin reporters.
Yeah, it was about, I want to say, 2 or 3 a.m. It was really late. We had all spent hours being out there on the field reporting, sending messages to our editors, really scared about the scenes that we were seeing on campus towards the protesters in the encampment, the level of violence and vitriol that was in the air. We had documented reporters hearing things like racial epithets. I personally witnessed a counter-protester slam a wooden slab onto an individual who had her hands on the barricade of the encampment and smashing her fingers and listening to her scream and watching how that changed the environment. And many more harrowing scenes have been discussed by students on this
and
campus.
Who were these people?
Yeah, we have been trying our best to be accurate about that. And I think in a Los Angeles Times article, colleague talks about being attacked by one of these pro-Israel counter-protesters and how they have known who we are on campus, and they know that we report on these issues, and sometimes they know who our faces, and when we're leaving and we're vulnerable and we're in a small group, we were encircled and attacked, and they started shining lights in our face, spraying us with very strong irritants, circling in particular one of my colleagues and physically harassing and assaulting her. And by the time I had finally managed to help get three of us out of there, we found one of us had turned back. And by the time we had looked back around, they were on the ground being violently assaulted. And we were trying our best as we ran back screaming their name to pull them out of that fight, pull them out of the ground, pull people off of them. And we were begging while they were flashing.
This was Catherine Hamilton, who was hospitalized?
Yes, she was.
How are they beating her?
You know, it was a very, very quick scene. I know she got hurt in the stomach, and I know that additionally we had so much tear gas in our eyes already from the protests that by the end of it, it was just hard to walk back. It was hard to make it back.
And Shant, could you explain? I know that you said people are being careful about trying to talk about who the counter-protesters are, but could you tell us what you know? Were most of them not students? Were they students? If you could explain what you know.
Yeah, I mean, we do see students on, you know, rallies supporting pro-Israel groups. We have a pro-Israel group, the Jewish for Jewish faculty, and they themselves have actually distanced themselves from this behavior. But we do see a lot of non-UCLA students coming onto campus and sparking a lot of these controversies that end up going viral online on social media, and that do require deep, thorough reporting that goes beyond the kind of outrage bait that unfortunately fuels a lot of the conversations.
Where were the police? Where was security as this attack went on?
They were nowhere to be found. We actually walked up to a few campus security afterwards asking for help, as one of my peers was crying and having a breakdown, and I was trying to help the other two as well. And they were not able to help us with anything. They didn't know what to do. And in fact, we had documented that campus security, when faced with threats, these are private security guards handled by the campus before the actual police had even come on campus, they would run away when they or hide in buildings and deny reporters access to those buildings when they were afraid of what they saw on the scene and on the site when it got too violent.
And Mel, you were there reporting on what happened. Could you describe where you were and what you witnessed?
Yeah. So myself and another reporter showed up around 10 p.m. We found ourselves on a side barricade next to Royce Hall. And we had a pretty good vantage point of the two sets of barricades that were separated by a sidewalk prior to the confrontation happening. Around 10:30 or 10:45, there was some sort of altercation, some sort of argument between the private security and the pro-Israel counter-protesters. And they very quickly dismantled the barricades and began ripping flags down from the Gaza encampment, pulling barricades apart, trying to rip apart the wooden barricades behind the metal ones that were installed there. And that continued for about 3-4 hours. It was a chaos. Very scary, very quickly.
I mean, it's fascinating that the corporate media is describing this as just clashes between two different groups, the pro-Palestine groups and the pro-Israel groups. Mel, from your perspective, you're a reporter with the Real News Network, what we're hearing here is an assault by one group on the encampment.
Right. You know, I've been to the UCLA encampment on the first day when they were setting up. And from the jump, there have been individuals who have tried to agitate these demonstrators, these students. They've tried to get a rise out of them. They've tried to provoke some sort of violent reaction. And, you know, to their serious credit, these disciplined students have spent a lot of time and energy and effort not responding to that. We're trying to de-escalate situations, trying to keep each other safe, trying to keep the integrity of the encampment safe, because the point is not to get into an argument with counter-protesters, right? The point is to continue to pressure UCLA to divest from the various relationships that they have with Israel, and to boycott these programs that are funding an occupation and a genocide. So to see what happened the other night was essentially these counter-protesters, many of them riled up and angry and, you know, throwing slurs over the fences, getting a chance to try and rip their way into the encampment. And this had been, tensions had been growing for multiple days, right? This was not the first instance of violence where pro-Israel counter-protesters were knocking over students, were trying to provoke fights. Some fights broke out even, you know, two nights before. So from my assessment, as I was there, these groups, this giant group, probably 150, 200 or so counter-protesters, some of them were university age, some of them were much older and did not appear to be UCLA students, launching assaults on this barricade. This was consistent for many hours. The bear mace was in the air. I mean, you know, I witnessed a lot of folks getting bludgeoned by parts of the barricades, by wooden sticks, batons, whatever they could bring. And that was a constant for the 4.5 hours that I was there.
So, Professor Gay Teresa Johnson, if you could describe what you know is happening right now on campus at UCLA and what the response of the administration has been to the encampment since it went up.
This is something that so many of us feel disgusted by. We are, many of the faculty who I spoke to as late as just about 45 minutes ago, were feeling shocked. They were feeling so disillusioned by the response of the university. This is a university administration that has for weeks, for months, equivocated the experience of people who are proclaimed Zionists to those Muslim students who have been doxxed and harassed every day, and faculty as well. And so this is a situation in which students have been subjected by the university to a complete negation of their experience, not only here at UCLA, but across the world. The idea that there are, as Amy said earlier, clashes between protesters or that there are fights that are breaking out between these two people. We're talking about a nonviolent protest. We're talking about students who have been organizing for months, who are trained, have taken it upon themselves to educate themselves on tactics of nonviolence, and the incredible and brave way in which they defended themselves all of these nights, but of course in the culminating violence of night before last, and then of course of the violence of this night as well, as they've been gassed, flashbangs that have been set off by the LAPD. And it's just been incredible the way that they have responded in the face of the gaslighting that the university has done against them. They have just done such an incredible and brave job. And many of us, while we are shocked, we are also understanding as faculty that thousands and thousands of students across the nation, across the world, have been politicized today. And there is no way, just because the LAPD and the UCLA have mandated the dispersal of these students, that this is the end. It is only the beginning, because there are so many people now who understand that this is a movement and it cannot be unseen. It cannot be put back in the box.
And finally, if you could explain, where do negotiations stand? Has the administration been speaking with students about their demands that UCLA divest from Israel?
The other day, the university offered the students three options. One was negotiations, which we saw yesterday. There was no negotiation. There was an offer of absolutely nothing. Students had demands that were completely ignored, that wasn't even in the discussion once administrators came to the camp. They were offered absolutely nothing. The second option was to continue in a sort of long-term action with encampment. But it wasn't a real legitimate choice that the university was giving these students, because they were going to make them adhere to policies that they call time, place, and manner that would have evicted them from the encampment and forced them into other places that would have been completely ineffective as far as protest and visibility. And the third action that administrators, third choice that they gave students was police action. And they said, you know, if you don't take the first two, which were in effect completely false, then we will assume that you want police action. And in the end, they didn't care. They didn't ask what students wanted.